Is that on now? There we go. I can tell that. I am so glad to be here today for a couple of reasons. Number one, I'm glad to be visiting in this congregation that has a reputation, a reputation of faithfulness, of soundness, and I'm always happy to gather with good brethren on the Lord's Day, wherever that may be. I'm also grateful, extremely grateful, for this topic to be addressed, for the wisdom of the leadership of this congregation to address this topic not only today, but on an annual basis. And I'm afraid it's a topic that is in much neglect. There's a lot of reasons why I think many churches don't talk about financial matters as much as they should. And one of those reasons may be because it seems so carnal, it seems so worldly to be talking about finances in a period of Bible study and worship. But that's really a misconception. It's a misconception that may be understandable for a lot of reasons, but I think also it can be a weapon that our enemy uses to get us to not talk about things that are very, very important. The Bible does have a lot to say about our money. We'll talk about some of that this morning. The lesson that I selected for the Bible class hour specifically was originally designed for young people. And I had selected four major points that I felt young people really need to know, but then I added two more. And the reality is there's probably several dozen other things that really need to be addressed for young people today. Young people that are not getting a sound financial education if they're attending public schools. I know. I was a school teacher for many years. And I know the burden that teachers are under to try and cover all the material that they have to cover in their short days. And I know that there are certain agendas that are in place in educational systems that cloud realities in many instances. So these are lessons that are extremely important, and they need to be taught from a biblical perspective. So six things every teen needs to know about money. I hope you'll take notes, and I want to state from the beginning that these are not complicated concepts. You know, sometimes it's the simple things that are really the most important, but are often the most neglected. Simple concepts. And yet very, very extremely important. And I'm going to make this statement. These are important spiritually. And we'll make those connections as we go along. We're going to talk about six things that every teen should know about money. Here they are. I'll give you the outline quickly. We won't be able to go very much in depth on each one of these topics, but at least you'll be able to get a sense of some of what the Bible has to say about money and how it relates to your life in a very practical way, both in terms of your living and in terms of eternity. So number one, we're going to talk about why money is important. There's a lot of misconceptions. There's a lot of misconceptions out there about money, and we're going to deal with some of those very shortly. Number two, we're going to define what money is. If you ask my teenage boys, hey, what's money? They got a good idea of what it is. And it may not be the most accurate idea of what it is. Because they haven't lived life enough to understand what money is really all about. So we'll talk a little bit about what exactly money is. We're going to talk about how to get money. Hey, that's a fun topic, right? Does the Bible say anything about how to get money? Yes, it does. It also tells us how not to get it. So we'll deal with that a little bit. Then as we go along, we're going to talk about how to spend money. Now that is an important topic, one that very few people feel they need any instruction on. And I know people know how to spend money, but they really need to know how to spend money the right way. So we'll deal with that. We'll talk about the importance of saving money. And that's a topic that is sorely needed. And finally, we'll talk about how to share money and the importance of that. And then at the very end, hopefully if there's time, I'm going to give you a very simple financial plan that's biblical, but will serve you well if you can start with this as your foundation in life. Okay? So that's where we're going to go. So let's talk about why money is important. First of all, there are a lot of misconceptions about money. A lot of misconceptions. There's people out there that believe money is bad. And they will even quote Bible verses. For example, we'll find the term filthy lucre, referring to money. See, that's bad. Money's bad. It's filthy. Well, we have to understand context. And money is an inanimate object. I've got here some money. Here's a $20 bill. $20 bill. Is there anything evil about this $20 bill? There's no more anything evil about this $20 bill than there's anything evil about this remote control device. It's what? It's how you use it, right? I can use this for good. I can take this $20 bill and maybe a couple more with it and send it to William Chin, who is a missionary in Taiwan. And that money is going to do much good. It's going to save people's souls. Or I can take this money down to the local liquor store and find some sort of libation to consume and get in my car and run over a child. Money is not evil. People are evil. Money doesn't do things to you. Money allows you to do things, good or bad. It amplifies our character. If I'm a good person and I have a lot of money, I can do more good. If I'm a bad person and I have a lot of money, I have the capacity, the ability to do a lot of evil. So it's more like an amplification device of who I already am. So there's a lot of misconceptions about money. I've heard people say, well, you've got to be crooked to get a lot of money. Really? You know what God said to Satan? Have you considered my servant Job? There's no one else like him. A wealthy man was set upon a pedestal before Satan himself as a model. No, you don't have to be crooked to be wealthy. And there's this phrase going on. If you've earned some money, then you didn't really deserve it. That's not yours. And political figures will make those kinds of statements. And people that are trying to manipulate other people and so forth. So there's a lot of misconceptions about money. So let's talk about why money is so important. Number one, as Brother Doug mentioned earlier, there's a great emphasis on money in the Bible. Did you know, is baptism an important topic? Certainly. The capstone in the plan of salvation is an important topic, but it's only mentioned about 75 times in the Bible. What about love? Is love important? Where would we be without love? Does the Bible talk about love? Yes. And love is mentioned in the Bible fewer than 500 times. Money, possessions, and wealth, the Bible talks about in over 2,350 verses of the Bible. You see, when we neglect to study what the Bible has to say about money, we're missing a great host of spiritual instruction. Jesus talked a lot about money. 16 of his parables alluded to money, or were some sort of illustration using money, or were, in fact, specifically about money. About 15% of Jesus' teaching recorded in the Gospels was about money. In the Gospel record, about 1 out of every 10 verses in Matthew, Mark, and Luke are about money, possessions, or wealth. In the Sermon on the Mount, in one sermon, Matthew 5, 6, and 7, Jesus alludes to money, possessions, and wealth 23 times. Have we neglected what the Bible says about money? Money is an important Bible topic. And if we spoke from the pulpits as often as Christ did, to the extent that Christ did, we would need about 7.7 Sunday morning sermons a year on money, possessions, and wealth. Someone asked me, well, why don't churches talk that much about money? Well, there, you can imagine there are several reasons you could come up with. One of which is sometimes people get turned off by our approach because a lot of times it's very negative. We emphasize the warnings, but we don't emphasize the blessings. That can be a turnoff. That can make people tired and uncomfortable. Not that we shouldn't listen to the warnings, but often when you start getting close to money, people can also get very sensitive. Someone asked me, well, why is that? I said, well, because most of the time the wallet is very, very close to the skin. And if you start talking about a man's wallet, if he doesn't have the right spiritual perspective, it can be a very sensitive topic. So when I talk about money, I try to do it in a very sensitive way, but I don't want to neglect what the Bible teaches on this topic. It's an emphasis in the Bible. Bible helps us form character, or money helps us form character. Why did Jesus talk so much about money? John 2:25, because he knew what was in man. He knew that how we handle money, young people, how you learn to handle money now will affect you your entire life. It affects how you deal with other people. It affects how you will interact in the church. Look at all these things. It helps you. It affects how you preserve your family during bad times and good. If you were completely independently wealthy, you had no need of anything from anybody, what would that make of you? You might be a perfectly loving individual if you had unlimited resources, unlimited wealth. But there's a lot of people who would become an island to themselves. The need, the economic function that God built into the fabric of man creates a dependency upon each other. When we live in a society, I have to buy shoes, I have to buy clothes, and I can't spend my whole time, my whole existence, just fulfilling every need that I have purely from my own ingenuity. I have to rely on other people. And you know what? You have to rely upon me. And what that does is it forces us to get along. It forces us to be independent or to be dependent upon one another for our needs. And if you're the only dentist in town, and I treat you badly, and suddenly I have a toothache, what's going to motivate you to want to do business with me, to help me in my infirmity? So money is a very, very important tool for society. Money has something to do with salvation. Really? I thought there were 5 steps of salvation. Hear, believe. Well, I don't mean that money, you can buy your salvation. But you know what? God integrated money even into the worship of the church. We have a collection on the Lord's Day. And why is that? Because it's important. It's important that we use the resources that we have, our money, possessions, and wealth, in the furtherance of salvation. Money helps us exhibit gratitude and helps us to be grateful individuals. Money helps us exhibit godliness. Nebuchadnezzar, he was blessed with so much. So much. He was so wealthy, he had conquered all these nations, and one day he was walking upon his palace and he said, "Look what I've done." And what did God say? He says, "You don't get it. You were given these things so that..." He was given a vision prior to this, that he was this great tree that all the animals of the forest and all the birds could come build their nests in. And he was designed by God. He was blessed by God to be a benefactor to other people. And because he didn't recognize that, his kingdom was torn away from him, and he was forced to go down on hands and knees and crawl out into the wilderness and live as an animal until he learned the lesson. That why we have, one of the reasons why we have money, possessions, and wealth is so that we can be a benefactor to other people, which is godliness. We'll talk about God, the giver, later on. And training. Turn in your Bibles to Luke chapter 16. Jesus teaches a parable beginning in Luke 16:1 about a certain servant, a steward, who was identified by Jesus as an unjust steward. He was not fulfilling his responsibility well, and he was fired from that position. And he thought to himself, what am I going to do? He says, I'm too weak to dig ditches. I'm going to be broke. I don't know what to do. So what he did was while he still had authority over his master's goods, he went to some of the debtors and he made bargains with them, made deals. And Jesus said this. He said he did wisely. The unjust steward did wisely. Well, what did he do wisely in? In that he used, granted not his own, but he used money, possessions, and wealth to bless other people so that they might bless him in return. So that was the principle there. And the whole point that Jesus is using here, not that we should be crooked, not that we should be unjust stewards, but that we should learn the lesson of being wise in using our material wealth to bless people in this life for spiritual reasons. Primarily for the salvation of their souls. And that's the point he's making here. But look in verse, in kind of a summary statement, in verse 12, he says regarding this, and if you have not been faithful as a steward, listen to what he says, with that which is another's. You're a steward, you have blessings from God, you have material wealth, you have possessions, you have money, but that's not your own. That belongs to someone else. You're a steward. He said, if you can't be faithful with your money, which is someone else's, and does anybody know who that someone else is? Who does our money really belong to? God. Young people. This $20 bill was in my wallet, but it's God's. It doesn't become God's when I put it in the collection plate. It's God when it's still in my wallet. It's God's when it's still in the bank before I get it. It's God when it's on the printing press coming out of the mint. God owns it all. And he says here, Jesus says, if we can't be faithful as stewards of that which is another. Now listen to this. Who will give you that which is your own? Get the lesson. We've been given the ability to have money, possessions, and wealth now as a training vehicle for a period in time in which we will be given something of our own. And I would suggest to you that a consideration that we don't have time to go into right now, but I would suggest to you that that is an eternal blessing that he's discussing. What we do with the possessions we have now is training. Earth is a training period for eternity. So we've spent a lot of time trying to talk about why money is important. So let's get into some practical matters and some of these other things that we said we'd talk about. Quickly, what is money? Like I said, a lot of, you know, you don't have to ask my boys what money is. I mean, they know. But in reality, this really isn't money. I mean, we attribute it as money because it provides many benefits that money, real money, conveys to us. But real money, what money really is the value that someone is willing to give you in exchange for something of value that you give to them. So, in a different country, it would look very different. This is currency. This is something that we have all agreed to in the United States, legally, through representatives and through social contract, that we'll all honor one another's green paper. When you come into my sandwich shop, I can make you a sandwich. And if you give me some of this, I'll give you the sandwich. So I give you value, you give me value. If you're hungry, you will value the sandwich more than you will value the green paper. And I've got lots of sandwiches in my shop, and I don't particularly value them as highly individually, so I'm willing to part with those sandwiches, right? So I can trade them, and I'd rather have some of the money. So that's what money is. It's a tool by which we exchange value. And why is this so important? Well, let's talk about how to get it. There are three ways how to get money. One is through benevolence. Someone's kind to you and hands you money. Or something that you could go trade for money or do something with. Now, benevolence is a good thing, especially when there's a great need. We see the Apostle Paul gathering money from Christians throughout the ancient Roman Empire and bringing it to Jerusalem because there was a great famine and there was great need among the saints in Judea. They received money not because of a value that they had delivered, although Paul does make the argument in the book of Romans that, in truth, they did deliver value because they were the tool by which Christ came and then the gospel came forth. And so that he really argues to the Gentiles that you did receive something of value. But benevolence is usually given as a gift. And the problem with benevolence, it's nice when people give us gifts, and we should be grateful. But you know what? It takes, birthdays only come once a year, right? Or if we're waiting for someone to pass on and leave us a bequest, that doesn't happen too often. So benevolence, you can acquire money through a gift from somebody, but that's really not the way it works on a day-to-day basis, young people. You'll find out in a few years that what your parents said all along, that money doesn't grow on trees, is true. It doesn't just fall out of the sky. You have to do something else for it. There's taking money, right? There's people that take money. How many has ever been robbed? Anybody? A few? I'll tell you what. When I lived in Stockton, California, I've been robbed so many times I lost count. People would come in. They would break into my truck. I had like this Toyota pickup that was a magnet. I got to where I wouldn't even lock the doors anymore because I was tired of replacing windows. I had a boat one time. I had a little aluminum fishing boat, 14 foot. I was so excited. I got it. I brought it home, got it out of storage, got it all cleaned up. I was going to take my two little boys. They were little at the time. We're going to go fishing. I rush home from work, run into the house to get the boys, and I just noticed something. I walked back out. The motor off my boat was stolen. I had a boat with no motor. One oar. Fishing trip canceled. There's people in this world that will take what they don't deserve. They'll take it illegally, right? Like the people that stole things from me. They don't respect the laws. They don't respect you. What's yours, what's mine is mine, and what's yours is mine, is their philosophy. And they will take what you have. They'll take it when you're looking, when you're not looking. And there's even some who will take it legally. They will figure out the laws. They will figure out the angles. They will even lobby the politicians to help them steal legally. I'm reminded of a case just a few years ago where an elderly woman had some property. And the city officials used a legal procedure to condemn her property, take it away, and give it to a real estate developer for resort. Not for public use or public good, for a private company. That was legal, she lost in court, legal theft. And sadly, it's becoming more common, unfortunately, as we have a generation growing up with a certain philosophy that's been taught, an evolutionary philosophy, a survival of the fittest philosophy, a godless philosophy, and they are now in control and in power in high places. And you know what the Bible says about that? Read the prophets. Because this is what was going on thousands of years ago. 3,000 years ago, read Isaiah, read the prophets. What did they do? They robbed widows. They would bribe the judges. And they would thieve legally. That's one way to get money. There's different kinds of taking. But let's not just beat up on the politicians and the power grabbers and all that. Young people, when you get your first job and you start filling in that time card and you either clock out later, then you really stopped working. Or you stand around texting your friends when you're supposed to be doing your work assignments, right? And young people, it's not to beat up on you, because people of all ages and all cultures and all segments of society and all businesses, there are corrupt people wherever you go. But I emphasize young people, because if you can start now an idea that I am going to give maximum value for the money that I receive, for those that bless me, you will be so far better off. You will be building a foundation that will serve you well as a child of God. Because you are not just working for your boss. I worked for a man, Jeff Chappell, for several years as a teen. He was a great boss. I enjoyed working for him. And I had nothing to be ashamed of when I left his employ. We were friends. But I wasn't working for Jeff Chappell only. My mother taught me when I was a little child, when I was out raking leaves and doing a pretty sorry job of it, my mother would come and quote to me this Bible verse: "Work as unto the Lord." Your Lord is your employer. And that's why Paul could say to the servants, "Be faithful to your masters." Because your real master is Christ, and you're representing Christ in your employ. And when you're in business, you're representing Christ. You're not just representing a product or a service. Give maximum value for what you receive in exchange. And so that's the third way to get money, is by giving. Giving starts the receiving process. When you give great value, you will receive great value. Focus on learning how to give value to other people, and you will have no problem getting money at all. How to spend money. Number one, there are three laws about spending money. We'll go through them very quickly. Law number one is money goes where it's told to go. Now, you can tell it where to go, or somebody else will tell it to go somewhere for you. You can plan where your giving is, or somebody will make a plan for you. And I don't have to go the time in this morning session to go through all the illustrations that I can give of people who ended up broke because they let somebody else tell them where the money is going to go. For example, credit cards and interest. They'll dangle a free gift or some sort of offer too good to be true. But in time, the interest rates so accumulate. I could tell you the system by which credit card companies have a specific system in place to get you permanently in debt. We don't have time to go through that this morning. But you have to have a plan on where your money is going. Plan your spending in advance. If you tell the money where to go, it will go where you tell it to go. Number two, money travels through time. We could spend some time talking about the time value of money and how money invested today will travel through time into the future and provide you with many blessings. I talked to a lady recently who was cutting my hair. She talked about how she liked giving money to, you know, she just gives money away. Da, 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 da. I told her, I said, you know what? And she's an older lady. I said, you know what? What you need to think about is that there is, you're going to meet a lady in the future who is old and broke. And you need to start giving to her today. And if you want to know who she is, go look in the mirror. Because if you don't send money into the future, there's none going to be there waiting for you. And that goes two ways, either through debt or through an investment plan, a savings plan. Money travels through time. Money spent on physical things provides the least amount of value. If you really want to get maximum value out of how to spend money, focus on things that grow, your family, spiritual things, spiritual blessings, values, influence. Those are the greatest values that you can spend money on. Learn how to save money. There are three famines. Joseph was blessed. He was able to give warning to Pharaoh that there was a famine coming. There would be 7 years of plenty and 7 years of famine. And by the way, the economic cycle isn't much different today. About 7 to 11 years is our economic cycle of recession and boom and back and forth, the economic cycle. There are three famines you will face in life. Every person will face these. It is the economic cycle. There are times in which money will be plenteous. There will be times in which it is scarce. There are times in which you will have a good job. There may be times in which you will lose your job. And here's the plan that God gave to Joseph to give to Pharaoh. Don't eat it all up when times are plenty. That's why you need to learn how to save money. There are personal disasters. You may be victim to a storm. You might have a car crash. You might have a health crisis. There's these kinds of things that may happen, and if you're not properly protected or prepared, those can be an economic disaster, a famine in modern times, a personal famine, not necessarily affecting the whole land, but affecting you just as much. And finally, the evil days. That's a famine everyone will face if we live long enough, where our ability to earn income declines, our health declines, our physical energy declines, our resources decline. Prepare now for that famine because it's coming. Young people, you're in days of plenty compared to your latter future. So keep those things in mind. Don't spend it all up. It's a hard lesson to learn. It's hard because we want to buy this and we want to do this, and we can't miss out on this. The only reason the Israelite nation was preserved was because Joseph had the wisdom to put in place a plan not to spend it all up. How to share money. We'll talk about this later. We're gonna wrap up our class here. But you have to learn how to share money. And I'll just make this one point. Every dollar that you earn in this lifetime will pass through your hands. None of it will stay in your pocket. Because when you leave this life, you don't take money with you. Money is an earthly invention. It is an earthly tool. And if you don't learn now how to share your wealth, then you will never understand the greatest joy, the greatest blessing of this great economic idea that God has. He invented gold. He invented silver. He invented costly gems and other precious things for a number of lessons, but for one is for our ability to be like him and be a sharing individual. So here's your quick, you can write this down in 30 seconds. Young people, start now. Learn to share 10% of your money. That's a starting point. That's not a legislation. That's just a starting point. That's just a suggestion. Oh, you're teaching tithing. No. I'm teaching a lesson plan. A little financial plan. A suggestion. I'm not legislating. Some people may not be able to do that. Their income is not sufficient. But if you can, start with 10%. And then when you really get good at managing money, you don't have to be limited by 10% anymore. I know individuals who give 90% of their wealth away. And they can survive easily, handsomely on the remaining 10%. So in the Christian system, if we're talking about giving, we're free to give as much as we possibly can. And finally, you have 70% to manage your spending with. Spend it wisely, manage it wisely, and you will do well as a servant of God Most High. Thank you very much for your attention.